Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm glad you've tuned in. And happy St. Patrick's Day. They say we're all a little Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Today we're talking about veterans and homelessness. 6 years ago, the Obama White House and the Department of Veterans Affairs embarked on a lofty goal to end veteran homelessness by 2015. 2015 has come and gone without meeting that goal, but the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development reported that between 2010 and 2015, homelessness among veterans dropped by 36%. In January 2015, just under 48,000 veterans were homeless in the U.S., according to a national point-in-time survey. That's 27,000 fewer veterans than were counted homeless in 2010. And the number of veterans without any shelter, those staying on the street, declined by nearly half. In this hour, we'll discuss continuing efforts in Maryland to house those who serve their country and to ensure that homelessness is rare and brief. With me here in Studio A to discuss this is Christopher Buser, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you.
And also John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station. It's a residential treatment program that works with veterans struggling to end the cycle of addiction and homelessness. The Baltimore Station has a location in South Baltimore, adjacent to Stadium Square, and another in Sandtown, Winchester. Welcome, John Friedel.
Good afternoon.
And also with us is Susie Sinclair Smith, Executive Director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless. Late last year, Montgomery County announced it has effectively or functionally ended homelessness among veterans. Montgomery joined the state of Virginia and several cities around the country that have also announced they've ended homelessness among veterans: Houston, New Orleans, and Winston-Salem and Fayetteville in North Carolina. Susie Sinclair Smith, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here today.
Well, it's great to have you. Can you explain what functional zero means when Montgomery says it has functionally ended homelessness among veterans? What does that mean?
There were two standards as a little background to that question. As we all work nationally to end homelessness amongst veterans, First Lady Obama had a mayor's challenge to end veteran homelessness. The measurement for that in terms of whether or not veteran homelessness was ended was how long were veterans experiencing homelessness. So if a veteran falls into the experience of homelessness, they move out of the experience within 90 days. So that was the standard for the mayor's challenge. So if you're able to move all veterans back into housing within 90 days, you've effectively ended veteran homelessness. We in Montgomery County met that standard, but we also met, there's a national campaign called the Zero 2016 campaign. It was in the federal strategic plan of the national goal to end veterans by 2016.
And veteran homelessness.
And veteran homelessness. I'm sorry. Thank you for that important question. That standard was a functional zero standard. And what that meant was that they required communities to measure the number of veterans that they placed into housing each month. And so you functionally ended veteran homelessness when you only had that number who were waiting to be housed. So we,
in other words, the number waiting was the number you could do within a month.
Exactly. And it's in recognition, and I was so glad to hear in your introduction, that there's a federal strategic plan, and we have a county plan to end and prevent homelessness. And people say, how can you end homelessness? How can you end poverty? It's an intractable issue. Ending homelessness has now a definition that it's a rare, brief, and non-recurring event. So it's rare when people fall into homelessness. It's a brief experience when somebody is experiencing homelessness. And then the intervention that you provide is one that's so solid that the person won't return. So we in Montgomery County, we housed 58 veterans last year. We're very fortunate to have a smaller number of veterans experiencing homelessness. By the end of the year, we had six veterans who had housing plans. We had housed six veterans each month the preceding year. So we knew that we would be able to house those six veterans.
And so, you started in 2010 when the federal government started. You made this push.
Very good question again. Our county executive and also our state senators have had a real commitment to helping veterans in our county. Our county executive, Isaiah Leggett, was a veteran himself and created a commission on veteran affairs. We're very fortunate to have someone from the VA with us. The VA has an awesome tool of the HUD VASH vouchers herbs, which are.
Right, we'll talk about that. I don't want to.
We were able to chip away at the issue earlier on, but I think having the sense of urgency with the state, the political will, and then we also had local resources that our county council committed $500,000 to house those veterans who weren't eligible for VA benefits.
Okay. Well, Susie Sinclair Smith, you have put a lot on the table. Let me turn. I don't know whether I should turn Christopher Buser to you or to John Friedle to ask what's going on in Baltimore. John Friedle, since the Baltimore station is in Baltimore, let me start with you. I mean, I know Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake also signed on to the mayor's challenge to try to end homelessness among veterans by the end of 2015. It hasn't quite happened, but give us the picture of what the situation is in Baltimore and how it's changed.
I think Baltimore City is a bit different in just the sheer volume of people and also the lack of resources in terms of affordable housing and other community partners to really kind of make the impact as evident as Montgomery County has seen. Just the sheer volume, you know, we last year served over 335 individuals, 296 were veterans. So it's 88% of the population that we served were veteran-based. And I know that there's still folks out there. So we work very closely with the Veterans Administration to make sure that folks are accommodated in the best and most reasonable way that they can be in terms of the resourcing that we have. But yet, it's still difficult, even when they move past our programming and complete with mental health and substance abuse treatment, to find that permanent home for them or that more permanent home for them in terms of even leveraging the subsidized vouchers, the SSVF. So I think we have a larger volume of people. We have a lot of people who have been homeless chronically longer, whether they're cycling in or out of the doors. Some have actually been out in the environment for a much longer time. We currently have a resident who probably has been out there for about 10 years on his own. So the complexity of the client and the sheer volume of the client, combined with a lack of resourcing in terms of rural access to permanent housing, are part of the struggle that we face here in the city.
Is the picture brighter now than it was in 2010? Are there fewer veterans homeless in Baltimore and around Baltimore?
I believe when you look at the data, and Chris can pull that from the VA probably better than I can, but I think that the numbers have gone down. We still have a long way to go.
Christopher Buser, what would you say to that?
Well, I would agree with John that we have seen the numbers go down. We did sign on with the mayor and the mayor's challenge last year, which I think was a great tool for us. And one of the things that came out of that was a by-name tracking of our veterans. We meet with our
Tracking them by name.
Tracking them by name. So, you know, we work with our continuum of care here in the city. HUD has a tool, the HMIS, which allows folks to track individuals. It's a homeless management information resource where we can track individuals. And by doing case conferencing with our partners, like the Baltimore Station and the city and other locations, we know by name who's where everyone's located and what their situation is, so that we can start working with them to develop a permanent housing plan and find out what the particular barriers for them are going to be in their individual struggle. But I would echo what John said, and that a lack of affordable housing, lack of employment, generalized poverty, substance abuse, and mental health still kind of become the five main reasons that it's difficult to end homelessness.
So, but you know them by name now. You
Yes.
know who has a problem. So give me a picture of mm-hmm. who it is. And first of all, how many? I mean, here we are near the end of middle mm-hmm. of March. In 2016, how many homeless veterans are there
in
this part of the state?
Yeah, well, let me tell you a little bit about, you know, our program. So our main hospital is located here in Baltimore, but the VA Maryland healthcare system covers pretty much all of central Maryland up to the Pennsylvania line, out as far west as Frederick and all the way out east to the ocean and basically down to Montgomery and PG County. Then you start kind of bumping up against the Washington, D.C. VA. For us, we have our HUDVASH program, which is a permanent housing.
This keeps coming up. So we need to take a minute right now and talk. VASH stands for
sure.
Veteran.
So the HUD is the Housing and Urban
Development.
And VASH is the VA Supportive Housing. So it is a collaborative effort between the two federal agencies. HUD provides the vouchers for the veterans. VA works to connect that veteran with the voucher and the local public housing authority. We also provide supportive case management for that individual. And that's a lifetime voucher, and the case management goes along with that. So right now we have 864 veterans through our hospital who are utilizing the HUD-VASH vouchers. We just found out the other, about 2 weeks ago, that we expect about another 75 to be coming our way, which will certainly help. We have a very large...
you'll get another 75
An additional
vouchers.
75 vouchers. About 50 of those will be in the city, and the other 25 will be spread amongst the other counties that we work with here in, with the VA Maryland Healthcare System.
And you already know from your tracking who's going to get those vouchers?
We already have an idea who's going to be getting those, so we'll be working with the case managers to get them connected, those who are ready to go. This is a Housing First program, meaning that you know, somebody who's struggling with mental illness or substance abuse doesn't have to, you know, be clean or, you know, have gotten everything under control. If they are ready to move into a permanent housing situation with the support of the case manager, we can move them in right away. And we use that permanent housing as the stable platform by which we wrap all the other services around them, their health care, their substance abuse, their mental health treatment, et cetera.
That is Christopher Buser, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System, here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with me here in the studio is Susie Sinclair Smith, Executive Director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless, and John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station, a program for veterans in Baltimore. Are you a veteran or related to a veteran who struggled to maintain housing? Have you taken advantage of services provided by the VA? Do you see homeless veterans in your community? Give us a call. Join in this conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us 410-662-8780. 410-662-8780 is our local number. John Friedel, what, from your perspective at the Baltimore Station, what has changed in the last few years in terms of what's available for veterans? I mean, I have this impression, based on not knowing a great deal, that when Christopher Buser is describing to us what seem to be sort of wraparound services for veterans to get them into a home and make sure they've got what they need to stay there, that's kind of the approach that the Baltimore Station is trying to have done for a while.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the areas where it's changed so much for us is that really with the Housing First models, in terms of getting veteran back in the community, back into housing, we recognize that it will shorten the stay sometimes for a resident in recovery, working on the mental health issues, working on the substance abuse issues, really handling some of the PTSD residual and also the effects physically from coming in from being homeless, that we have adapted pretty quickly to rise to the occasion to work more closely with the Veterans Administration to make sure that the wraparound services are the right ones, and then ourselves deliver more of them in the community. So we're really developing an aftercare model where we can leverage our intensive outpatient licensure to work with that veteran who then gets placed in a home.
I'm not sure I understand what an aftercare model that leverages. Tell me that in a little more plain English.
Sure. So we are a residential treatment facility. So actually, while you're working on recovery, you're living in our dorms, in our facility, and are with us working with case management team. Once you leave our bed and go and get your own apartment, leveraging one of the vouchers that Christopher talked about, we would then still be there in an aftercare model, an outpatient model, so you could come back in and still receive the services for mental health and for substance abuse and any other things, workforce development, things that would keep the veteran in their housing longer, more successfully, and enable them to really transition into independence. So we've adapted from purely an inpatient residential model to really doing that aftercare provision to keep someone in the community. And so we're positioning ourselves, even with looking at adding on permanent supportive housing that we would then construct and refer into, to make that circle a little more complete and a little tighter so no one can fall through the cracks.
Christopher Buser, you mentioned, I think you said 864 veterans already have a voucher from HUD that helps them meet the rent for a permanent home.
Yes.
And you're about to get another 75 vouchers. And I'm curious as to how close is that to meeting the need?
Sure. So we also, another large portion of our programming is our grant and per diem, and this is where we are able to contract for beds and programs like the Baltimore Station for veterans to, so that we have a place when they've been identified, if they're on the street or just losing their housing and they need a place to go, that VA can place them in one of these great programs. We are able to pay for them to stay there for up to 2 years. Now, the goal is not for them to be there that long. You know, as Susie was saying, you know, we really want to have this process, you know, be less than 90 days. But some of our veterans, you know, do feel that they would benefit from being in a more intensive program, you know, for a little bit longer to address those issues, more so than taking advantage of the housing first. So we have some great flexibility with that two-year limit. We have about 350 grant per diem beds that we utilize throughout our catchment area in Central Maryland and over onto the Eastern Shore. So obviously with only 75 vouchers coming, we can't give them to, you know, all 300 and some veterans who are in those
but
programs.
You're saying this per diem, this daily kind of daily rate help that you can give sort of steps up and fills in some of the gap for the permanent vouchers that you don't have enough of.
It does. It fills that gap. When you were talking about the point in time count earlier, you know, the point in time count done in January of 2015, we looked at Baltimore City. There were about 35 veterans who were identified as being unsheltered homeless. And when we talked about going by name, we got the names and social security numbers of those individuals. And we went back to check and find out what's going on. What's the history on this person? Do we know where they are in the system? One of the things that really surprised us up front was that when we actually went back with those 35 names and social security numbers, we only found that 8 of them actually ever served in the military. So there was a large portion of them that we could find no evidence that they had ever served in the military at all. Now, that might have been that somebody, you know, was a little delusional, or maybe somebody was trying on a survey to, you know, answer positively to a question that may have gotten them a benefit.
Could be. We will pick all this up when we get back. We're going to continue to talk about efforts to end homelessness among veterans in Maryland. I'm here with Susie Sinclair Smith, Executive Director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless, John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station, and Christopher Buser, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System. Do you know a veteran who struggled to maintain housing? Have you volunteered with organizations that serve homeless veterans? Are we doing enough, in your view, to pay the debt we owe our military veterans? You can join our conversation by sending us an email at midday@wypr.org or phoning us 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. According to the National Coalition for the Homeless, about 40%, 2 out of 5, of all homeless men are veterans. Today we're talking about efforts in Maryland to provide military veterans with permanent housing, as well as mental health services and substance abuse treatment. Is an end to veteran homelessness in sight? With me here in the studio are Susie Sinclair Smith, Executive Director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless, John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station, and Christopher Buser, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System. You can be part of this conversation if you have some insight as to what you think homeless would help homeless veterans or homeless people in general. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. We've been talking about the efforts in Central Maryland to give veterans what they need to get out of being homeless. And Susie Sinclair Smith, you wanted to add something that you've been doing in Montgomery.
Sure. I was very glad to hear the Department of Veterans Affairs mention the importance of knowing each veteran by name. The Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless, we operate 60% of the emergency shelter in the county, 40% of the permanent supportive housing solutions. We also have a safe havens program for veterans who have severe mental illness and are waiting to access HUD-VASH vouchers. We were very fortunate to have those resources at hand. We convened the whole community, including our VA representatives, other providers, and we had veteran by veteran list, and our criteria for the veterans that we helped was that they actually served in active duty. Many veterans cannot access VA benefits because of questionable discharges or mental health issues. So we knew which veterans on our list were eligible for VA benefits, so we worked closely with the VA to make sure that those veterans were able to access as both the SFVF program as well as the HUD-VASH program. But then we had a lot of veterans who were not able, even though they'd served in active duty, to access those resources. So our local government gave us $500,000. We moved 20 veterans who were not eligible into permanent supportive housing, which means that they had rental assistance and case management services to help them be stably housed. A great example of one of the veterans that just stands out in my mind was a male veteran who lived on the streets for 30 years. He
was a Vietnam era veteran?
Yes, and he lived on the streets in downtown Bethesda. I hope this is an okay thing to say on the radio, but he was arrested for defecating on the street in downtown Bethesda and put in jail. And we all knew that he was on our list, and so we waited until he came out of jail to say, do you want to move into permanent housing? And usually when you ask somebody who experiences homelessness directly, it's the housing first approach. It's non-conditional. He said no, he didn't want to move into permanent housing. One of our clinicians on our staff said, well, tell him that, does he want to have his own bathroom? We have 32 units of permanent supportive housing in downtown Bethesda that we own, and we were able personally as an organization to waive the requirement that he sign a lease, that he, you know, go through a background check. We gave him the key to his apartment. He started using his bathroom. Within 2 weeks, he started sleeping there. He worked with our case manager on site, signed the lease. He's now cut his toenails, can wear shoes, is very much a stable member of the community. And this just happened within a period of 3 months.
How often do you run into a situation where, let me ask you, John Friedel, where you can make an offer of housing of some sort to a veteran, but he or she prefers not to take housing?
Rather than a flat refusal, oftentimes we'll run across a client who is not quite ready and doesn't feel quite ready, and that enables us to leverage a little bit of extra time to work with them to secure the additional supportive services to help that transition down line. We rarely have anyone who does not flat out want their own housing. But they do recognize that in many cases they bounced from housing before. It's not worked out before. We can start to unpeel the layers and figure out why and work on those things and maybe take a month or two or three or a few more to figure out what is the best placement. And sometimes it's moving back home to family. Other times it's moving in with a relative. Sometimes it is getting their own housing. But it really, you know, there's rarely a flat-out no, but more of an investigation and more work that needs to be done to get them ready to go somewhere permanently.
This is Midday on WYPR. That was John Friedel. You just heard he's executive director of Baltimore Station, the Baltimore Station. Also here with me is Christopher Buser, chief of social work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System, and Susie Sinclair Smith, executive director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless. Montgomery County has functionally ended homelessness among veterans in the county. And I want to welcome someone else to the conversation now, Paul Martin, program manager for the Baltimore Station. Paul has worked there for 12 years. He's a Navy veteran. He's a graduate of the Baltimore Station's recovery and housing program. Welcome to Midday, Paul.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine today.
You served in the Navy from 76 to 78.
And yes, I did.
What happened when you left the military?
When I left the military, I wanted to get back into the community, but I found out that my career choice while I was in the Navy was quite different in the community. I was a mess management specialist in the United States Navy, and my responsibilities was to feed about 5,000 people three times a day. And they had the most state-of-the-art kitchens and procedures in order to do that. But I find myself in the community working in restaurants. It wasn't as up-to-date. I find myself doing menial jobs, and I was a part of a workforce that did not necessarily help me to maintain a quality of life that I saw for myself.
So what did that lead to?
What happened was because of those those substandard, what I saw as substandard things that led me to feel shame and guilt because I saw myself being a better person and living a better quality of life in which I was living. I saw myself being full of shame, and so I started to medicate using alcohol and drugs just in order to cope every day to maintain those jobs and those hot places and those long hours. And so therefore, I took more time medicating and using drugs than I did with putting in on my career choices.
So at some point you got connected to the Baltimore station. How did that work?
Well, after I succumbed to the drugs and alcohol and finding myself needing to get more structure in my life, I found other veterans that had went to programs in Baltimore, such as the Baltimore Station, and they led me to this place. And, of course, I wasn't really ready, and I hadn't accepted it for about 4 years before I made up my mind to come to the Baltimore Station. But once I did, they asked me to change three things, and I could change my life. And those three things were to change everything that I said, thought, and did. And I found out that to be more difficult, and I continue on that strive today.
But that's a pretty big change. You make it sound. I thought you were going to say three simple things, but you're saying it change everything. You were homeless during those years that you were in touch with the Baltimore Station, but you didn't see yourself ready.
Yes. What I did was I couch surfed. I went to sleep on families' couches. I wasn't extreme as what one of your participants were talking about, the homeless man who stayed in the streets. But I was homeless by going from house to house, family and friends. So for about 4 years, I was really homeless. But after a while, I just got tired, and I came to the Baltimore Station, and they asked me to do some different things that would change my life immediately. One was to stop everything that I was doing, such as using drugs and alcohol, and follow directions. And so once I started doing those things, I found out through the case management process that they have in place here that I was able to do much more, like those activities of daily living, which helps me to survive today and to be able to take care of my mental health and physical health and things of that sort.
And so today, as a program manager, what do you tell clients you work with about your own experience? What lesson is there, do you think, for them?
Well, today's veteran is a lot different because we find a lot of younger people coming today. But I use myself as a part of example. And we are a client-centered program. So pretty much I don't necessarily disclose everything that I've been to, but I put more of an emphasis on their presenting problems and what they're going through. And I find myself being more of an active listener. And we have a treatment team approach where we take and we assess individuals and we deal with their presenting problems. But when I have to, and I have to sit down and get in close proximity of a guy and share some of my experience, I tell them that if they want what I have, they have to do what I did. And the thing that I wanted was to get a better quality of life, to become a better manager over my life, and just to become an overall better person. And the Baltimore Station and the way that they do things and the theories and processes that they have in place helped me to do that.
And I should mention, along the way, you have completed, I don't know that you've completed your education, but you certainly furthered your education. You went to community college, and then got a BA from Coppin State, and then an MA from Coppin State 4 years ago, right?
Oh, yes, I did. When I came to the Baltimore Station, I hadn't completed my education, and that is one of the things that I had to do that I wasn't happy about. Returning to school, I didn't like the basic education and before I went to the military, but I had to return, and I was able to achieve all my educational goals, starting with my high school diploma, and yes, I did have a master's of education in rehabilitation, which I got in December of 2012, and which allowed me to serve the individuals in our population.
Congratulations on that. What misconceptions, Paul Martin, what misconceptions do you think people have about homeless veterans?
Homeless veterans, one thing that I see that individuals have a misconception about is that veterans aren't human. These individuals did at one time live in the community before going into the military. It's just that at a stage of development in their lives, they were snatched away and they were taken to a place where they were taught to do some of the things that we, the community thinks that is unthinkable, such as kill, maim, and destroy. But those things were necessary steps to keep our land alive and free. Many of those individuals that I serve at one point in time said that they will protect the Constitution of the United States from all foreign and domestic enemies. We found out that when they returned to the community, that some members of the community see those individuals as strange and different, but they're still human. They just know how to do some things that others claim. These individuals that I have the opportunity to serve are strangers to the community in some ways, that they don't know the community. And that's one good thing about the Baltimore Station, that we work closely with the community so the community can show themselves as friends and that the people that I serve can show themselves as not strangers. This is one of the greatest things that the Baltimore Station brings, is that they help to the individuals to work together for one good, and that is to be productive members of the community.
Let me ask my other guests here about that point, Paul Martin. Susie Sinclair Smith, when you hear about the community aspect of this, mm-hmm. is that something that you found important in Montgomery County to address the homelessness of veterans?
Oh, it's essential, and I think that we're all in this business, especially. Some of us are just here working to end homelessness, and I think we all agree that our nation should not have any people who experience homelessness, but especially people who've served our country to come back. And what we see is the difference between the Vietnam-era veterans, when there weren't the resources available to them when they returned, compared to the resources that are available now. What happened for us in Montgomery County with the Zero 2016 campaign, there was a common community cry that no veteran should experience homelessness. Our phones were ringing off all of ours were. We reached out and had a true community campaign and broke down so many silos, the Department of Veterans Affairs would turn over a veteran status determination within 24 hours. Our housing authority would do an inspection within 24 hours. That there was a real sense of urgency, and I think it came from that community will and appreciation that no veteran should experience homelessness. We also had one of the big issues that we face, because we do move people into permanent housing to end their homelessness, is there's a big gap. I think we all take for granted what it means to move into a new home. You know, that you need furniture, you need household items, you need
pots and
pans, 2 weeks of food before mm-hmm. food stamps can kick in. We had our community members adopt a veteran, and we again had way too many. There were congregations, businesses. They would buy all the furnishings, the household items, the food, and help the veteran move in, or veteran family. We moved five families into their homes, and it was around Christmas, and it included Christmas trees and celebratory kind of items, and then they would keep in touch with them and invite them, so serve as a mentor for them to help them maintain their housing stability.
John Friedel or Christopher Bucer, in the geographic areas where you work, do you pick up a sense of urgency in the broader community about ending homelessness among veterans?
I do. I really do feel that the community is in on this. As Susie was mentioning, our Vietnam veterans were not received home well, and we still see that playing out, where about half of all homeless veterans are the Vietnam era. So those, you know, kind of errors in our ways as a society from 40 years ago are still plaguing us today. The community has certainly wrapped its arms around the veterans who are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. I saw that firsthand as a veteran myself. I've served in the Army from 2002 to 2011, and it was kind of embarrassing to have people, you know, pay for my meal at a restaurant if I was in uniform, you know, here in Maryland. I certainly am no hero myself. My brother is a combat vet from Iraq and Afghanistan. And so having seen it, you know, wearing the uniform, the support that the community gave, but also seeing the support that comes from our community here in Baltimore and also on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, you know, their continuums of care coming to us and saying, what can we do? How can we help? Mm-hmm. I think something that maybe our veterans understand, but maybe somebody who hasn't served in the military may not appreciate as much, is the amount of support that the military provides on a day-to-day basis. I had an opportunity to be a company commander in the Army, and if there was a soldier who was having a problem, you know, wasn't, you know, able to pay a credit card bill, that was the kind of information that got communicated to me, and I was able to then bring that soldier and that, you know, first sergeant in, and we would come up with a plan, and we had resources on post to, how are we going to get this right? How are we going to take care of this young soldier?
And that kind of support stops then when
As soon as you leave and you go back to your community, you don't have a first sergeant who's there to make sure that you're up and at work every day, that if your personal appearance starts to, you know, go south, that some, you know, in the Army, someone's asking you, what's going on? Why is this happening? We're providing housing, we're providing food, we're providing medical, and we're really following up and holding, you know, our soldiers and Marines, you know, accountable. But when you leave that, there is no one there to check on you. There's no first sergeant to make sure you're all right, no company commander to try and knock down a door and get you a resource. So we need to have the community support. You know, the VA or the Baltimore Station or the community organization can't do it by itself. We all have to work together to make this happen.
And on that point, we need to take another short break. And I want to pick up on several other things when we get back. Paul Martin, I really appreciate your talking to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
We're going to stay with John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station, Christopher Bucer, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System, and Susie Sinclair Smith of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless. And what about you? Do you think that homeless veterans deserve services that go above and beyond what's provided for other homeless populations? Do you know a veteran who has struggled to maintain his housing or struggled with mental health and addiction issues? Join our conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us 410-662-8780. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Is an end to homelessness among veterans in sight? What types of services have proven effective in ensuring that veterans' homelessness is rare and brief? We've been talking about in this hour. How can we ensure that veterans who get off the streets are able to maintain their housing? I'm speaking with Susie Sinclair Smith, Executive Director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless, John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station, and Christopher Bucer, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System. You can join this conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780, or you can send us an email to midday@wypr.org. John Friedel, you actually, the Baltimore Station actually reaches out to pull the community into some of your activities, right?
Yeah, it's very different than a lot of other residential treatment facilities and certainly shelters, but we rely upon and really encourage a large level of support from the community and different groups and organizations. We have over 200 groups that come to the Baltimore Station on a regular basis to serve dinner, to do days of service, to engage with the men, and to really kind of draw them out of their shells. And we look at that as hugely important in terms of rehabilitation and bringing someone back to community. When you bring community in, these are the people that our men will then see on the street and engage with in community, and then it gives the community a better perspective of humanizing our population and really bringing everyone to an equalizing level. So for us, it's a great way to bring the community in so they understand where people have been who've served our country, and then also to create that platform and sense of a safe community for when our men go back out to really re-engage in a meaningful way without that lens that someone might be looking at you as being homeless or dirty or on the street, but as a functioning member of society. So it's an equalizer.
And is that something that you knew from the beginning, that the Baltimore Station needed to have this community network, or did you sort of figure it out?
Well, the Baltimore Station really started as a grassroots entity 27 years ago in Federal Hill, when some of the residents from the community in Federal Hill recognized that there was a large population of homeless men around Cross Street Market. And it started with blankets and sandwiches and then really kind of morphed into what it is today, where it's always been a part of the community and the community's always been a part of the Baltimore Station. So it's evolved that way over time.
We have Chris is calling us from West Baltimore. Chris, welcome to Midday.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to point out that it's going to be hard to end homelessness in Maryland when the administrations are kind of not as cognizant of the issues as they should be. So in Baltimore, we built a fence around the war memorial to stop homeless from sleeping there without considering how many of the homeless were actually veterans. The issue for me is that we need to address the mental health issues in particular, because while some of them or many of them may not have served in combat, they've been trained for combat. And so they have a different mindset. There are some who do not want to sleep indoors after coming back from rotating back from theaters of conflict. So they need to have their individual issues as a demographic addressed before they can be treated as a homeless population as a collective.
I appreciate your call, Chris. I think that's a message that some of our guests have been giving. Susie Sinclair-Smith?
I think the benefit of having a by-person list, as we've both been talking about, is huge, because we knew who each individual homeless veteran was, who their case manager was, what their diagnoses are, what services they need to be connected to, and what services are they eligible for. So I couldn't agree with that more. And
Christopher?
Yeah, I think you really need to have that individualized approach. You know, here at the VA Maryland Healthcare System, I have a staff of 72 individuals who work just to end homelessness. 19 of them are veterans themselves, and they are social workers, nurses, and our peer support individuals. So they can kind of connect on that individual level. And as John was mentioning, Sue was mentioning it as well, some of our veterans, they're not refusing to go into housing, but they have to do it at a pace in which they're comfortable, and they have to address the issues that make them uncomfortable and going into living, you know, in an apartment. If you've been on the streets or have been in the military for a long time, that may be a very foreign and scary place for you. And I remember one female veteran in particular, she had been living in the woods down Anne Arundel County for a while, and her hair was very matted, and, you know, it was very obvious that she had not, you know, been, you know, to get a haircut in a number of years. And we talked to her about the fact that, you know, we can, you know, help you with that. We can actually, you know, pay for you to go and get your hair, you know, done and cleaned up. And she said, no, until I'm fully secure that I'm in the house, I don't want to change my hair. Mm-hmm. Because she was out panhandling, and she said, if I stand on the street with this hair, people will recognize me as authentically homeless. If I clean up, people will think that I'm out there scamming the system. She goes, so until I'm really ready to commit to being in my apartment, I don't want to touch my look. You know, she just wasn't comfortable with that yet.
Yeah, I think the caller makes a really good point in that, you know, we really need to meet everyone where they are. And I think that we're sort of, as Susie said, and what Christopher's been talking about, we are beginning to really, on a case-by-case, able to work closely with representatives from the Veterans Administration, other providers, to understand sort of the history of where some of the clients have been, where they're going, and where their needs need to be met going forward. And we can really begin to construct some real case plans that are a little more robust and deal with some of those really delicate issues that each individual has that may not be uniform.
Chris, thank you for the call. Susie, Sinclair-Smith.
Just quickly, when I first started working on homeless issues in 85 in D.C., and back then we thought we'd solved homelessness because we had a right to shelter. And I think we've come a long way in terms of understanding why people are experiencing homelessness. And there's a lot of evidence-based best practices, one of which is housing first, to make the fewer barriers before people needed to be housing ready before they moved into housing. Mm-hmm. Now it's housing first to reduce the barriers. Trauma-informed care, recognize that the people we serve have experienced trauma. So if they go punch a window out, don't kick them out. Say, well, what was it that caused you to do that? Another way, a motivational interviewing, rather than saying, Christopher, how long have you been an alcoholic? Say, Christopher, how are you feeling today? Oh, I'm not feeling great because I had, you know, too much to drink. Well, have you thought about drinking less? You might feel better. And motivational interviewing. So there are really good strategies out there to engage even the most vulnerable people. But the key is to remove those barriers to housing.
One thing I need to ask any of you who can address it is this focus on ending or making rare and brief homelessness among veterans pulling resources away from other homeless? Susie, you're shaking your head.
No, I don't think so, because veterans do have a wealth of resources that are eligible for them. What we're finding also in Montgomery County, and I think this was the strategy. I worked on the federal strategic plan when it was being developed in 2010, and the idea was that if you can end veteran homelessness for veterans, where everybody feels that that's a very compassionate population, that it will pave the way for other populations. So the systems change and the breaking down of silos that we saw in ending veteran homelessness, we're now on to ending chronic homelessness. And I think that it creates more resources and creates better systems.
John, you were nodding your head.
I think what it does is it creates some best practice models, and it really kind of sets the stage for us to then share the same level of resourcing, same level of data for anyone who's experiencing homelessness. And right now, we know with the continuum of care and the sort of beginning of that kind of trajectory, I think we can then really expand the service offering to a more wide-based population and really kind of get at the problem. But I think some of the best practices are coming from this kind of collaboration between agencies.
And we have just a couple minutes left. But I got to tell you that my impression from this conversation of best practices is sort of flooding the zone. I mean, Christopher, you mentioned a few minutes ago that you have a staff of 72 at the VA Maryland healthcare system, and that's up, I think I read, by about a third or so in recent years.
It's up dramatically. When I started in the VA a few years back, we had about 7 or 8 folks who were dedicated. And with the coming on of the president's mission and his goal, and also with the HUDVASH program, we went from about 6 or 7 individuals up to 72. Just last year alone, I hired 22 individuals for our program. So we have grown tremendously.
And so in this minute that we have left, I need to get a sense from one of you, is that the message then to society, to taxpayers, about ending homelessness, that we should be prepared to put real resources into it,
yeah,
as we have been?
We have to put real resources into it, and it's cheaper to do that. You can rehouse someone for about $11,000 a year. If you try and incarcerate them and send them through mental health programs, it'll cost you about $30,000 a year. It's about only a third of the cost to house them.
Well, and I think, too, doing it the right way so that you can get permanent or more permanent and more long-lasting success in housing through an investment up front, rather than people just cycling through and sort of rotating through, and you see the same names over and over and over again, where we're incurring costs but multiple times smaller hits.
John Friedel, we've got 30 seconds left. Tell us about the event that the Baltimore Station has coming up in April.
Coming up, we have our 24th annual Home Run for Recovery. It's going to be at PBR Live in Power Plant 34 Marketplace. It's on the 14th of April. In the evening. It's going to be a fun event. Music, auction, live auction. Come see our website, www.baltimorestation.org.
We will link to that on the midday page at WIPR. I want to thank you all. This has been an uplifting and interesting conversation. Susie Sinclair Smith, Executive Director of the Montgomery County Coalition for the Homeless, John Friedel, Executive Director of the Baltimore Station, and Christopher Buser, Chief of Social Work for the VA Maryland Healthcare System. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guests today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features unique sandwiches and salads, specials each day, all listed on their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. It's spring, time to get busy in the garden. Nathan Sterner will talk to 2 gardening experts about native plants and attracting pollinators. That's tomorrow's midday. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.